Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 385.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and when we race to the finish line of 2023, what a year! What? It's a year. I am your guest host, Benari Lee Poulton. Your regular host, Nikin Farsad, is on emergency assignment today. We wish her all the best. And we also want to wish her, it's a holiday season, but we would be remiss if we did not mention the birthday party for her five-year-old. So in the midst of all this holiday festivity, she's also had to throw a party for a five-year-old. So if you think that the holiday season is stressful, you know, throw a five-year-old's birthday party in the mix, because why not? Today, we're going to be talking about men's fashion, whether the tie's going to be making a comeback. We're also going to look at the merits of job training versus a college diploma. This is a real banger of an episode, and to get into it, we have some real phenomenal guests, and just couldn't be more excited to be guest hosting this particular show. You know this guy from Grand Crew. Please, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together out there for Jockeys Neil.
Hey, what's up? I'm full. I still got a full belly from all the eating I've been doing.
That's right. Yeah.
Over the past week, you know, I still feel good.
Yeah, we are filled with turkey and love here at Fake the Nation.
I'm filled with turkey and hate.
It's you know, as again, that's, you know, two sides of a coin. We are also just thrilled to have here with us, you've heard him before, you know him, you love him, he's a podcast host and producer, Jody Avergan.
Hey there, what's that thing in Turkey, that thing that's supposed to put you to sleep?
Tryptophan?
Yeah, but it's actually, the latest research shows that it just fuels you with hate.
It fuels you with hate.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
It's true.
That's why you don't like your family. That's why you don't like your family on Thanksgiving.
That was actually the reason why they finally decided not to make the turkey the national bird. They were like, "Oh man, too much hate. We got enough of that here. Yeah. We don't need it from our birds too." Well, we just we're so thrilled. We're just going to get right into it with topic number one. Will the tie ever make a comeback? We read an article in the New York Times, of course, which it took on the question that everyone's been asking. Will the tie make a comeback? You know, the necktie, you all know that. It's that thing that men wear around their neck. It's not quite a necklace. It's really, you know, a professional guy's only way to express flair. It's basically saying, like, I work, but I also want to hang myself. So let's just get into it. Where are we on men's ties in 2023?
I fucking hate ties. I think they're ridiculous. If I have to wear a tie, then I will. Like, for instance, my character on Grand Crew, I played a sommelier, so I was in ties often on set, and I hate it every second of it. I was like, can I not wear a fucking tie, please? Like, in my everyday life, so I also host a show called Comedian Feud here in Los Angeles, and it is a live version of Celebrity Family Feud, and so obviously I'm wearing a suit for my show. And I've been doing the show for a year and a half, and I've not worn one tie. Like, I wear a necklace, or not a necklace. Why do I call it a necklace? I wear a chain, because I'm a man, baby. I'm a black man, baby. I wear chains.
You can also wear a necklace.
Nah,
wear a necklace,
I wear chains, baby. I wear chains. Yeah, I wear chains. And or just, like, even at weddings, like, I feel like we look so much cooler. And, like, when we wear a suit and you have, like, a collarless shirt or a turtleneck or like the unbuttoned top. And now look, if somebody likes a tie, I'm not going to be like, what the fuck, man, get your tie out of my face. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to be, oh, like, you know, wear what you want to wear. But for me, I think fashion looks better in today's world without neckties. However, you know, if somebody know, and also people don't know how to tie ties no more. Like, I was on set and the costume person was asking people, how you tie this tie? They're like, no, nobody even knows how to tie ties no more. And like all the different knots and shit. I don't know, man. Ties are oppressive, man. Argue against that.
Bangs gavel. You know, I will say it is remarkable that, you know, the three of us here, we're all recording this podcast from home, but we all are wearing suits and vests and cufflinks,
suits,
right? Yep. But none of us chose to wear ties, and it is remarkable.
No ties.
we're all wearing exactly as you would imagine we are dressed right now, listeners, is how we are dressed. So I wear a tie once or twice a year, and I wear a suit probably four or five times a year. So, you know, I guess I probably agree with you, you know, in terms of my practice. But I will say, like, when I put on a suit and tie, I like the ritual of it. You know, I think the question is kind of, will it be something that is expected or forced upon you, or will it go away as something that men like to do from time to time? I don't think it ever will. I think there's a really nice ritual to it. I think you feel good in a tie. I think I don't know. I feel like tying a tie has its own thing that's a little different from just putting on a suit with a shirt and an open collar. So I don't know. And I mean, and I will also say, I mean, this article got me thinking about something that I maybe anticipated and hasn't really happened coming. I sort of wouldn't have been surprised if coming out of the pandemic, there'd been a push back towards like dressing up, formality, a little bit of that. Like, we were all in our houses wearing sweatshirts all day, and now we want a little bit of the high life. And like, I don't really see that as having happened. I think people are fine in their sweaters and sweatshirts.
Well, I think, you know, you bring up an interesting point though, and you mentioned ritual, and it's interesting you say that, because I think the ritual of wearing the tie is making a comeback, at least in the Senate. They recently passed a rule on the Senate floor, because that was one of the few things they could get passed. Was a dress code. So they, you know, again, most pressing needs of the country was how our senators dress. But one of the things that the dress code does now is they have to wear a tie and a suit on the Senate floor. They can wear whatever they want else, you know, elsewhere in the halls of the Senate, but on the floor of the Senate, they have to wear a suit and tie.
It's like when you show up to a fancy restaurant and they're like, let's look in this closet over here and find something.
That's right. You have to wear a suit, you know, you have a jacket and all that. So
I think that's so fucking dumb.
Yes.
It's so dumb. Like, look, again, and I agree with you, Jody. I do think, like, whenever I do have to wear a tie and I get to tie, like, the skinniest worst knot ever, I do feel a little bit good about it. And I'm like, oh, I did that, even though it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
But, like, that's...
Yeah.
We, like, forcing them to wear ties and suits on the Senate. For what? Who are you showing? For what? Why? To do what?
Well...
To do what?
You know, when you want to rail against Jewish space lasers, you got to look good.
You got to look good.
No, I mean, this,
like, you got to look good when you want to undermine the political process and call the election a hoax.
We're going to talk about this in the next segment, you know, but it's kind of like it's trying to enforce a sort of, you know, seriousness and sanctity of the legislative body, which I guess in theory I'm all for, but like, you should enforce that through the way that you actually behave and the laws you pass, not with the lowest hanging fruit, which is like, what are you wearing?
If I want to come to the Senate floor and vote, you know, on, you know, some ridiculous bill to oppress marginalized groups, I should be able to do it in a hoodie and Jordans.
Yeah.
Like, I should be able to do it in whatever the fuck I want to do. It's very weird. And look, man, I know, like, we...
But I think part of the problem was some people were abusing it.
Yeah.
And you know, the hoodies, you know, we had Senator Fetterman who had his hoodies. People took offense to that. And apparently Ted Cruz would just show up in workout clothes from the gym, just sweaty, disgusting in work clothes.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably showering.
But again, for planting that image in my head.
Yeah, but again, that's also, I think, appropriate for Ted Cruz, as his outerwear was a reflection of his inner life and his inner disgustingness as well. But, you know, there's also a difference in the ties. You know, there's the skinny tie, which, if I'm wearing a tie, I'm a little guy, so I like a nice skinny tie.
Yeah.
And I'll wear like a dark suit because maybe he's a hitman. Who knows?
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's like a nice little sort of professional look to that. But back in the day, I remember when I was like in high school, like early days of college, when I got dressed up, man, we had giant wide ties, like the end of the 90s.
They're ugly.
Ugly ties. Loud ties. There was a whole, I had the entire line of Beatles ties. I had the Jerry Garcia ties.
Yeah.
I think one of my senior pictures, I'm literally wearing like a heather green shirt for some reason and a National Wildlife Foundation tie with like panda bears and shit on it.
Yeah.
Also like you could get to, like ties were also like, I'm saving the rainforest right. with this tie. You know, the things that we used ties to do.
Yeah.
I think we're asking ties to do more work.
We're doing that to do more. I also think like, and here's the thing, I will add this. I think like if you are wearing a fit and the tie brings it together, I think like I think ties as a necessity, and I think mm-hmm. ties as like some form of this is what makes you professional is ridiculous. Right. I think if you wear a tie for fashion, and like because mm-hmm. you think it looks good with what you have on, I'm all for that. Like there is a couple fits that like I'll have a cool tie, and like because mm-hmm. it brings the fit together with the color or the shape or anything, I'm all right. for that. But I think the necessity of a tie is dumb. I also, Jody, you brought up a good point, like about how after or a fun point how after the pandemic will we go back to like dressing up? And I'm so glad we didn't, because like man, people used to go to like the movie theaters in suits and shit. Like I don't want to go watch Hunger Games 8 in the suit. I want to watch it in my shorts. Mm-hmm. And
do you fly in shorts?
Probably not because my legs get a little cold, but I will fly in sweatpants. I'm gonna be as comfortable as I can while I'm mm-hmm. touching knees with a stranger.
Yeah. So can I add one thing about the something you brought up, which is the sort of ritual of learning to tie a tie, which I will say, like, I think I'm pretty decent at it, or at least pre-pandemic, I was sort of in a groove and knew how to tie like a sort of a mildly complicated knot. And, you know, it is one of those things where it's like feeling adept at something relatively inconsequential still feels kind of cool. And so I think there is a sort of like any little skill, it's like you learn to do it. It feels good. It brings to mind also this other phenomenon that I absolutely love, which is, do you know this YouTube phenomenon? I think it started with one guy and then it's now there's a bunch, but it's basically like, hey dad, how do I? And it's basically a guy on YouTube who's like, this is for a lot of people like me who didn't have a father to teach them kind of dad stuff.
Wow.
I'm gonna teach
that's
you
me.
And
that's
there's
me.
One where he yeah and there's one where he's like, here's how you tie a tie, and it's got like 8 million views, and it's just so touching and beautiful. And it made me think of this, of just kind of like, here's how you're gonna tie a tie, and you get, and the comments are like, thank you, I never had someone who taught me how to do this. It's so wonderful. So anyway,
yeah, I think ties will never go away. I think we all can agree on that. I think like the necessity of them has dwindled, and I'm all for that. You know, like that's why at least all my like, you know, the elders in my community and culture, that's why they all got hurt ass feet. It's because back in the day they had to wear dress shoes and shit to march, because we was all dressing up and shit. You know, we couldn't wear gym shoes. You had to look good to go march in 90 degrees for your life. Like, no, nah, man, put on some comfortable clothes. So I think like
heavy dark wool suits in the middle of an Alabama
with
summer.
With your tie being like, oh, this must be what it feel like to have a noose around my neck. Like, no. So I'm cool. Man. I'm cool with them. I'm cool with the necessity of a tie going away, but I don't think it'll ever go away.
I've never been able to pull off the like, casually
the loose tie,
loosened tie. It's
that's
so,
my look.
I'm so
right
jealous
there.
Of that look. I one of my first jobs out of college, I worked at an office that didn't have a requirement. People were like, quote unquote, business casual, and there was a guy who sat near me who would roll the sleeves on his dress shirt like one fold. Like every two, three, like you could tell how late in the workday you were by just the crispness and how high up it was rolled. But I just loved the like ritual of that. And I've never been obsessed with fashion and that kind of stuff, as you can probably tell. But I just will never lose that sense of like, he comes in, the sleeves are down, the cufflinks are on, and then just slowly over the course of the day, his sleeves get rolled up super crisp. And I could like literally look over and be like, oh, it's probably 3 p.m. His sleeves are up.
I also, I will say there's something to the like, Bobby Kennedy look of like the loosened tie, the shirt sleeve rolled up. Like, all right, now I've been, you know, I've been working hard. Now it's time to roll up our sleeves and get our hands dirty a little bit. Mm. You know, that kind of like, I did get dressed up for this, but it's been a long day. There's kind of a baller look about loosening
it
the tie.
It is. It's sexy. You know? It's sexy. For people who are attracted to men, it's kind of like that. Oh, that must be what you look like when you're starting to take your clothes off. Like, you know, like, and so I think like and even if you're not attracted to man, the reason like we would be like drawn to that type of look is because it is like a sense of comfortableness with yourself while still looking like somewhat like put together. But you're like, you're right on the edge of like, I'm cool and breezy, but I'm still professional and like, you know, tied up.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think one thing, and I think we can just close it out on this. The bolo tie is stupid. I think we
call it. That's my favorite tie, Lenari.
Come on. That's, you're doing the least amount of work there.
End on that incredibly divisive statement.
I'm sorry. Go back to Texas. That's like you wearing a belt buckle for a tie. Sure. Stop. Mm. You put some, you know, anyway.
We should make the bow tie come back. We should make the bow tie a little more popular.
Totally good with the bow tie.
The rotating bow tie.
The rotating bow tie.
That also squirts water.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we solved the tie dilemma, and we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing losing that money? I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
And we're back with topic number 2. Politics.
Yay.
And to kick things off with politics, let's just talk about everyone's favorite sociopath in America, George Santos. Is he going to resign? No. Is he going to get expelled? Probably not. We don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, all we know is that the fun train never stops with him. There's an ethics committee report that's come out. You know, I think we've all read it by now. It talked about some of his more bizarre campaign expenditures like Botox, Hermes bags, OnlyFans, because who among us? They also found out, though, that he pretend loaned his campaign 85 G's and then for real paid himself back for that pretend money. And I guess it's like a whole new scam he invented. So really, who's to say he's not the most innovative con artist in American politics? And that's saying a lot. So the question is, you know, for the first time since the Santos saga emerged, it seems like the GOP, you know, might actually oust him. I think there's been a tipping point where he's actually become more of a problem for him than a distraction. And, you know, what do we think on that? Are we there yet? Will they actually do the decent thing and kick him out at long last? Have they any sense of decency?
I mean, at long last is the operative phrase. I think the last time I was on this show, which was like in the spring, we talked about George Santos and it was like, I can't believe he's still around. And so, you know, that's been my real, I mean, like, I get a kick out of this story too, but I actually like really despair about the fact that this guy is still around. And I like kind of every week or so, like found myself Googling, like, is George Santos still in office? And it was like, I cannot believe that this guy is still around. I do think that this is going to be a tipping point, but also like, you know, the election's coming up and like he was going to get ousted anyway. So it's kind of like expedient, or it's like there's cover here to just be like, well, he's on his way out anyway. But this House Ethics Report, House Ethics Committee report is damning, and I think is kind of rallying people around. Although I can't identify like a specific thing in there that felt like the big red line that got crossed for a bunch of folks other than just an accumulation.
Right. There was no nuke in there. Right. It was more of like a firebombing.
But, you know,
it's all the same.
You know, I want to hear your thoughts on Santos specifically, but I'll tell you my big thought around all of this and the Santos story, which is like I really have come to believe that, like, you know, a big part of our politics and our sort of civic discourse is about kind of like telling ourselves what is beyond the pale. And we've basically mm-hmm. lost all of that, you know? And so to me, like, the fact that this is one of any number of examples of, like, especially the GOP, just not being able to kind of draw a line and say enough is enough. I mean, I think that's the kind of story of the modern GOP is just, like, it never willing to say, like, come
there's
on.
Never.
There's never something that's too yeah. odious. And I mean, I think, like, you know, a party's ability to guardrail itself is like a really important thing. And it's like, it's completely gone.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I don't disagree with any of that. Like, it is a remarkable thing that he is still in office. I think where I am on that freeway where we're going the same direction and probably in the same lanes is I'm not surprised that he's still here. So because of that, it doesn't, like, it's wild, but it's not surprising. Of course yeah. he is. Because, yeah, like, right. especially on the GOP side, like, it's been the past how X amount of years where we see so many different politicians who have done so many things who should probably be like, they should probably not be in office. And they yeah. still are, right? And on the flip side to that, for me, it is pure entertainment because the politics side of it is a non-starter for me. And the reason it is because, all right, he gets ousted and then they're just going to replace him with somebody worse. Like, so, like, it's, so for me, it's not like a, it's a, all right, whatever. Like, because, but the actual stance and the doing the right thing of replacing him because we need to have a line or we need to have the certain modicum of decorum where it's like, yo, you can't do all these things and hold office where you are representing people. Yeah. Like, you know,
well, the representing people part of it, I think, is, you know, a really fascinating aspect of this because he was a known liar when he ran, but he was kind of under the radar because New York politics in that instance was a mess. And so he kind of took advantage or benefited from the chaos of that one particular election in that district. And
yeah,
you know, and there, and, you know, look, there was an oddity to him. There was kind of, you know, I think there was some rubberneck voting going on. We're like, let's see how this one turns out. This could be fun.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that the ultimate guardrail has always been, well, it's the people, let the people decide. And I think that he's a walking loophole, if nothing else, right? He's showing the fragility of the democratic system, where it's just like, yeah, but what if enough people just like that kind of shit?
Yeah, but our democratic system has always had, and I feel like there's always a role for, like, that's what a party is for. That's what the adults mm-hmm. in the fucking room are there to do, you know? And I mean, yeah. the oh, people like it is such an abdication. I mean, you know, Trump gets up in front of crowds and says the most, like, awful, forget the politics of it, just says the most awful, inhumane shit in the world. And the supposed adults in the world can't just point to that and say, like, that's a shitty person. And yes, the people in the room laughed, but they shouldn't be laughing. And we're going to do something about it. Like, that is what parties are in theory for, is to kind of, you know, cool the temperature in a way.
And for a long time, you know, they had been the gatekeepers, right?
Yeah, someone like, and it's that a balance, right? You don't want the parties, you don't want everything decided by a small group of elites or whatever, you know, but I mean, like,
right.
The fact that you can look at this and be like, this was never enough. The party didn't find a way to say no to this, that it means, like, I think we're completely around the bend.
I agree with that. And that is the case. And I think we've been there. I think this is, and I know this is not what you're saying, but for some people, I don't think this is the instance where we're like, you know what? Maybe y'all not doing shit right. Like, we've been there, right? And so, like, I'm a very big proponent of, and like most things, not just politics, but in most things, where it's like, I try not to let things that shouldn't surprise me affect me in ways as much anymore. Because if that's the case, then I'm going to be walking through life upset a lot, you know, especially yeah. as a black man in this country. Like, so, like, I have to compartmentalize in that way, right? Because if I don't, then I'm going to, like I said, it's going to be a hard life for me every time I walk through the front doors of my house, because there's so much shit that I'm like, I can really, like, sit back and be like, God damn, why is shit like this? Where instead it was like, Yeah, of course. Like of course, yeah. It's like this. Like, if I go to a thing, if I walk into a Thanksgiving, if I walk into a fucking drugstore and the whitest part of the reddest part in the country, I shouldn't be surprised that, like, people gonna be like, what the fuck is this nigga doing in here? Like, I shouldn't be surprised about that. Like, you know, I mean, it won't feel good. But, like, right. I'm not, you know, but I should expect it.
It's not good.
And it's not
but
good.
It won't but it won't surprise
but it
you
won't
is what you're saying.
It won't surprise me. It won't surprise me, right? And it's sad that, like, sometimes we have to think like that. We shouldn't. We should be a more decent people than that. But, yeah, like, so.
Well, I think the decency and the seriousness is sort of the heart of it right here, right? Because there was a time when, you know, we like wearing a tie. It's like we've now, we used to.
Which he does, by the way. So I don't know how it ties in, but that guy is always
got a tie.
He wears
a tie under a sweater. Yeah. Under a sweater, which is a bold move now. You know, you are making a statement.
It used to be a proper country.
This used to be a proper country. But I think that it does speak to the seriousness of the party when their candidates aren't serious, and to move sort of the big picture here, you know, they have Trump is still the front runner, is still their front runner for the presidential election in 2024, which is coming up. A lot of Republicans are very concerned, being that he's lost Trump has lost three consecutive elections for Republicans.
If the Democrats have anything to do with that, he'll break that streak.
You know, but a lot of Republicans, like the Koch brothers, are now have decided to jump in, and they're putting their money behind Nikki Haley. And the reason is they think that, you know, they think the country is being ripped apart from both sides. This is a both sides problem. But they feel that Nikki Haley would help win Republicans races up and down the ballot in a way that Trump can and has not. Do we think, are we surprised to hear this? Do we think that this will make a difference?
I don't think it'll make a difference. No, I think I'm not surprised. I mean, like, you know, I think, like, at a certain point, you know, politics is sport. And if I keep passing you the ball at the top of the key, and you keep bricking threes, eventually I'm gonna be like, maybe we should stop. You know, maybe we should come up with a new strategy, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, it's a matter of that, I think, versus, like, you know, there's some, like, moral, like, if Trump was doing well, they would all be about Trump. Like, it's not like a moral
thing. So Nikki Haley is Jordan Poole in this, and I've lost the metaphor.
Yeah, yeah. Nikki Haley is Jordan Poole, but I'm saying Nikki Haley is the change-up of strategy, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. So this is more of like an in-season tournament versus the finals.
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
This is the kind of political, trenchant political analysis you only get.
Yeah, Fake the Nation.
We have three guys on the panel and Nagin is not here to counterbalance.
I do think that this is one way in which these two things connect, the George Santos thing and the kind of what do we do with Trump thing. I actually do think that there is a genuine, even among Republicans, even among Trump fans, a genuine, like, exhaustion. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like these fucking guys like Santos, like, yeah, he's entertaining. Yeah, whatever. But, like, it's just a lot, like, to think about this guy all the time. And when there are surveys with Trump supporters, a lot of them lead with, yeah, I don't like the guy. I wish he wouldn't open his mouth. It's kind of exhausting to root for him. But, you know, I'm going to root for him anyway. But, you know, I liked him and they move on. But, like, the fact that people are volunteering that, like, we are exhausted. This is it is just a lot to have these grifters and these people just kind of like taking over politics. I do think there is a lane there to exploit. I don't trust the Republican Party to be strategic enough to do it or to sort of send that message. And they continue to not consolidate behind a candidate, which was the problem in 2016 and is the problem now. And B, also try and like beat Trump at Trump's game, as opposed to pointing out to people like, isn't that game just kind of exhausting? And also, like, has lost a lot. Like, that's, I think, the way to point out, you know, kind of what the flaws. I happen to think Haley is probably the strongest candidate to consolidate behind. I think at this late stage, I don't know, but I could see, you know, I mean, a couple. Trump is all narrative, you know, and a couple things don't break the right way for him in not to mention the, you know,
the legal
actually
troubles.
Might be in jail, you know, and I could see it. But I mean, you know, I also,
which is not a deal breaker, by the way.
Right,
he could be elected in prison.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, I spent all of 2016 being like, well, next week's the week that the Republican Party is going to wake up and consolidate and get their act together. And I spent all of this year being like, this is the week that they're going to get rid of George Santos. And it hasn't happened. And so, you know, I don't trust it. But who knows? Who knows?
Do we think that any of these other candidates actually have a shot? Or I think they're all auditioning to be the VP candidate. Like all of these candidates right now, the Republican primary is basically the race to become Donald Trump's vice presidential pick. And I think he's not going to pick one. I think it's going to end up with, because the way it's going, you know, the media is not going to have a very exciting political season. This is not going to be an exciting election season for them. There's not going to be all these dramatic debates and who's the front runner now. I mean, we have an incumbent president for the Democrats, and we have basically the Republicans have their cult leader. And yeah. I think as we're barreled towards the and the debates so far for the Republicans haven't been rating successes. No one's watched them. No one cares. Yeah. So I think, you know, if anything, I think there's a world in which the Republican National Convention is literally basically Donald Trump running Celebrity Apprentice, where he makes these other candidates, you know, do weird jobs for him. And then he's like, okay, you're fired. You guys are still in the race. And at the end, someone's, emerges as his VP pick.
As his VP. Yeah. To answer your question of, does anyone else have a chance? I don't think so. Like, I mean, of course I can be wrong. And if I am wrong, it's not like I'm happy with the prize I get, you know, for. So like but I don't think so. I think you're right. I think what we're seeing right now is a run for a VP. If he chooses one of these people to be, because we know Trump, he could choose somebody who's not on that stage to be his VP. Like,
oh yeah,
and like that is more likely than him choosing someone who is on that stage, in my opinion. But I could see this being that race. I also don't think you are wrong in that the political season will not be exciting for the media for the primaries. I think once we get to general election, it's going to be fucking exhausting.
Yes.
Because, again, we treat politics like sports, and it's going to be Biden, Trump, too. And then all this is going to be fucking exhausting. And I'm not looking forward from August to November next year. Mm-hmm. SNL is going to be exhausting. It's going to be all exhausting.
It's all exhausting. I mean, look, I feel like you can see that, you know, normally Democrats are used to this already, this nervous exhaustion, you know, and so I think that's sort of typical. What we don't normally see is this from Republicans. Americans for Prosperity sent out a mailer in Iowa that showed images of Donald Trump and Joe Biden, and the mailer says, you can stop Biden by letting go of Trump, you know, so they're already sort of messaging like, you know, they're already messaging exhaustion as hurting their chances to win back the presidency, which is they've sort of flipped the script now. So does this exhaustion help Democrats?
I would love to know what you guys think of this. I personally think that what we're going to see is one of the lowest turnouts for a presidential election than we've seen in the past, you know, 3 or 4, which is historically always been the case to help Republicans.
Right.
I think that's where we're going to fuck up, is like people are not just going to show up to the polls. Now, we live in a society where a lot of shit can change. 4 months ago, I wouldn't have said that. So a lot of shit can change. Like, we're still a year out.
Right.
And a lot of things can change in a matter of weeks. So who knows? But like if the election was held tomorrow, it would be one of the lowest turnouts for elections that we've had probably since 2000, you know, in the past 3 or 4. And we all know who that usually helps. We all know who that usually puts in the office. Usually.
Right. Usually.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually. But, you know, asterisks at all of these elections.
Of course.
But I have a question for you. I mean, if it was Nikki Haley versus Joe Biden, Haley could win easily.
Of course she could.
Right?
Of course she could.
And so, I mean, I just kind of, you know, another instance of the Republican Party just not seeing its advantage here or its path, you know,
right.
Not to mention all the kind of like moral, all the moral reasons for making a decision like that. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's, if we're looking at it from the normal, just from the normal superficial politics of it, a candidate like Nikki Haley should be a slam dunk for the Republican Party. They've been handed like a pretty solid candidate that most people don't know too much about. She seems to be someone who's appealing to, you know, the yeah. center of those swing voter states.
And she hasn't pissed off Trump world.
And she hasn't pissed off Trump world.
In the way that a lot of others have, yeah.
In a normal world, if what we're talking about is under the, you know, what we used to do, but we're not there anymore. And I think that, I don't think that world exists anymore is really
that's the problem.
The problem.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. But it will, again, Jody, to your point, a lot can change. And,
right.
You know, and he might be in jail, which, you know, still.
Who knows?
Who knows? So who fuck is that? Who fucking knows? Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, if DeSantis, you know, if DeSantis and Trump are basically tied in Iowa, and then DeSantis and Haley are basically tied in New Hampshire, and then Haley wins South Carolina, which is going to have, you know, it's like all of a sudden, you know, she's sitting there, she's came in first or second, the first two or three, you know, I don't know, who knows. But all of that is like, that's a very traditional election analysis.
Yeah. I hope where all this is heading is that we just shorten the election periods to about 3 months total. Like maximum.
I mean, a lot of other countries do that, right? Though a lot of other countries will call a snap election and just be like, you know what?
It's
coming 3 months from now. We're doing it. Yeah.
Here it is. It's these people. Choose your best one. All right. Well, I think we've solved that one.
Yeah, totally. Forward this conversation to the RNC, and they'll take it from here.
They're very good at listening to people. Let's move on to topic number three. Another kind of contentious issue in the modern era, which is, do you need a college diploma to be good in the workforce? Should you even bother going to college, or should you start working? You know, we can take a look at some of the data, but as the cost of college has risen, so is the demand for college graduates. But there's a pay gap in weekly earnings for those with a degree and for those without a degree, and that's significant. In 2021, the average weekly earnings for high school grads was $809 versus $1,334 for those with bachelor degrees. Two-year degree holders, they don't fare better than most high school graduates with median earnings of $938 a week. And a lot of the arguments, you know, then can be, well, if you go to college, you come out with student loans, that hurts you, that hurts your ability to buy a home, to upward mobility, all of that. But college is about a pipeline as well. One thing that college gives you that not going to college doesn't give you is that you make connections. You know, these are the people you meet, people that will hire you, get in the club, so to speak. And, you know, looking at some of these, we have some of the majors with the highest median income: computer engineering, computer science, aerospace engineering, general engineering. But then you have a lot of these guys who dropped out of college who were very successful, like your Mark Zuckerbergs, who say it's not worth it. And look at me. I'm a billionaire. And I
dropped
created,
out of Harvard.
You know, right. He dropped. It's very easy to say when you drop out of a good school like that.
You didn't drop out of South Suburban Community College. Yeah.
So, but that also kind of shows you how the college game is weighted, right? So if you're going to a Harvard, you know, that's a pretty good school. But if you're going to DeVry, is it worth it? So I don't know. Is in today, even looking at the numbers, is it better to get a jump in the workforce, or is it still worth it to go to college?
This is one of those questions that just doesn't have a right answer, right? And because there are pros and cons to both sides. I think, like, if you force me to choose one, I think like the way our country and our society is, our economic society is set up, like the number of people who would have higher success are going to be ones with college degrees, possibly. However, boy, does it feel bad to have a college degree and be just as poor as someone who like does not, right? And I think like the weight we put on people's value, if they have a degree or not, is very skewed, because we live in a world where skills matter as well. And then it's also, you know, you're talking to somebody who has a college degree, who works in a profession that doesn't fucking need one. So like, you know, my college degree is pointless, but I enjoyed my college experience. And I enjoyed, you know, going to college and the people that I met. And like you said, the connections and things that I've made. And I think the skill sets that I came out of college with, basically as a trade, have helped me, as I've gone on in my life and my career. So yeah, I don't necessarily view it as a, is it worth it or is it not worth it? I think like, obviously if you decide you want to do something that needs a college degree, you need a college degree. Right. Right? And some of our higher earning professions require a college degree. With that said, I don't think it is the cornerstone of success and the cornerstone of money making, if that's what we're, you know, attaining to. But, you know, it will come with more struggles. But I think that's more of a, do you want a career or do you want job? Right. Question versus but, like.
But also there's this. There's this weird logic built into what you just referenced there of like, and you know what the anti-college argument that often gets trotted out, which is like, oh well, you know, college will saddle you with debt that you'll then, it'll be very hard to recover from. So the solution is don't go to college. Whereas maybe the question to ask is, why is it that college will saddle you with debt? Right.
Well, yeah.
The real question is, why is college so expensive? But you know, I mean, to your point, I mean, I feel like at some basic level, like an 18-year-old, I think that there is like more exploring and figuring out who you are and what you want to do and more vocational training and more learning to be done between the ages of like 18 and 24. Like, I think that like I see the value in those years and what college is there to do and the sort of experiential thing of just like building a community and finding new friends and stuff. Like, I just don't think, you know, when you're 18, I don't think it's just like go off into the workforce and you've got to figure it out and find your career. Like, I think it's another phase, you know, it's a perfectly reasonable phase in one's life and development to have college. I just think, you know, it's the fact that it's so expensive and the fact that it's thought of still as kind of like, I mean, in the last few years, there really has been, I think, a real and very encouraging sort of understanding that college can be a lot of different things, and the sort of like emphasis on community college and the emphasis on associate's degrees and 2-year college, and you know, all of these things can be valuable, and you can kind of have a bunch of different paths as opposed to just, you know, 4-year debt laden college as your only choice, or don't go to college at all after high school.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's this sort of brings up the point of like, does it have to be one size fits all?
Yeah.
You know, what is it that you need?
No.
And there's also different types of colleges, right? There's like specific trade schools. If you're going to medical school, right, you don't need that. You don't need the philosophy degree necessarily, but you do need college. You know, you need a baseline, then you go on to medical school. Same for, you know, becoming a lawyer. So there's some things, you know, me, I majored in English and theater, so I double majored in unemployment. You know, I probably could have, you know, which, you know, has worked out great too. Definitely, you know, but it is it's a question that you sort of struggle with all the time of like, what choices could I have made better? And I think it's like, if you're a sports star, if you're an elite athlete, and it's clear that, you know, you're being chosen, what is the value of delaying that entry when you're talking about your peak performance years, right?
Mm-hmm.
When a college degree is something you can always go back and get, but you don't need that college degree for the job that you're doing at that time, versus something like, you know, if you're going to be an aeronautics engineer, you probably need the degree first and then move into the workforce.
Right. But, you know, I would even argue in a not very market oriented major like theater and English, like those years are teaching you how to think. Those years are connecting you with your people who you will carry, you know, you will collaborate with going forward. Like, I do think
the experience,
there is a way to see that experience, but also as a sort of vocational asset, you know, if that's your chosen line of work. So, yeah, there are some things where it's like, yeah, I can learn how to become a really good, you know, at this vocation on the job or in with a, you know, 6 month training program, whereas other things take longer. But I think we have to just sort of, I think it's not, it's the, we have to think of a bunch of different paths that hopefully are just best accommodating what, where you want to, where
do we under, go. Do we undervalue the social aspect of college and the importance of,
I don't think so.
Okay.
No,
I think I agree. But is there this weird swing happening right now? And it's maybe an overcorrection to the fact that for so long we just thought of college as like the place you go and you sort of like meet your friends. But now there's this weird swing back towards like this technocratic view of college of like, well, you just need training. And,
right.
And so sometimes, you know, and I, but I do think the
And that you're like, not again, maximizing your performance if you're not.
I mean, that's
what I was
trying to point out earlier about the fact that, like, I don't think 18 year olds are fully developed selves. And so the idea that another 4 years to kind of find yourself is reasonable and valuable. And we should value that for what it is, in addition to the kind of quote unquote training you're getting.
Yeah. I think where we have changed is, because I do agree with that. I do think like at 18, you're a child. You're still a child, right? And I think we come to realize that as we get older, because at 18, I felt like a fucking adult. But, you know, at 37, I'm like, that first, you're fucking your children. To a degree, in a lot of aspects of how you are going to mature as you go through your 20s and 30s, and how, like, at 55, I'm gonna be like, God damn, you was a child at 37, you know? So, like, it's all relative, right? But I think where we have changed now is that, you know, for, I don't think that we overvalue college as much as we think we do. I think college is appropriately valued. I think in most cases, I think what we do is we undervalue and underappreciate the ones who don't go to college to a degree that, like, those jobs matter as well. Those people have something that they offer to our working and social communities and statuses as well. And I think that, you know, a lot of people, like, for instance, my mom didn't go to college. Right? I was the first person in my immediate family to graduate college. And, you know, like, I don't think that's the reason why, like, shit is easier for me than it was for my mom. You know, like, I think, like, the reason is, like, I've chose a profession that I can make a lot of money in a few minutes of work.
Right.
Which I could have did with or without college. But, like, I think, like, the choices that we make, or not the choices that we make, but the people who don't necessarily have a college degree, I think are undervalued a lot more than they need to be, because a lot of those people, real life experience is a thing. My mom was a single mother who had me at 16 years old. Like, I would trust her more than I would somebody who has a degree, for instance. Like, when it comes to life experience and when it comes to, like, knowing things and searching for things and knowing how to find an answer and knowing how to problem solve and knowing how to raise a fucking human and what that translates to, and the real world that we live in, as opposed to somebody who went to school and did all those things. I'm not undervaluing the person who went to school and learned those things. I just think there is a lot more value in people who don't necessarily have a degree than we give them.
Well,
in my opinion,
to both your points, I think that a lot of this has to do with the cost of education, because we kind of come at it backwards, right? I'm still of the strong belief that the humanities is as essential to a functioning society, and especially in a democracy, as science and math and history and all the other things. I think one thing that we don't necessarily value in the college education is the worth of a good liberal arts education, of well-rounded students, and offering that to everyone. because what college has sort of become is, oh, you have a college degree, which means you had the access and the privilege and, you know, potentially the money to go to college, as opposed to this is a thing that benefits all people. You know, I don't think we put a societal emphasis enough on the value of what a good college education can be, because we've wanted to make certain colleges more useful than other colleges, and certain degrees are more beneficial than others, and that sort of creates this schism of like, well, you got a, you know, quote unquote useless degree versus a degree that means something or can earn you more money. And I think also, as long as we continue to put the value in how much you earn, like, that isn't the sum total of what your value to a society can be, like, and your worth as a human. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that. I can go to a doctor where they all have degrees and are all smart, and it completely ruined my day. and then go to, you know, Walmart, where the general manager there has, in, you know, have everything laid out and like has a, everybody's happy. And I know that's never the case at retail, but like, you know what I'm saying? And like, that person knows how to run some shit, like, and knows how to do things in a way that is beneficial to my current day as well. And so, like, I think the value of, like you said, just the humanities part, or the person's value to like how they contribute to the success of a day, is a lot more undervalued than it should be. But, you know, college is expensive, though.
Jody, college is expensive.
College is expensive. Yes, agreed. Yes. No. College is expensive. Ties suck. The Republican Party is going to get its act together. We all agree.
Okay. We all agree.
You know what? I'm fine if they never get their act together. If I'm being perfectly honest, they don't ever have to get their act together. But I think that about wraps it up. I want to thank you both for being on the show. Absolutely fantastic. Jackie's, where can they find you?
Oh, well, listen, you can find me in the streets. You can also find me on Instagram at Jackie's Neal. If anybody is ever in L.A. or if you live in the San Francisco area in February, I run a show called Comedian Feud. It's always a good ass time. Come out to it. It's a live version of Family Feud with like huge names. And I'm going to be doing it at San Francisco Sketch Fest in February. We have Lamorne Morris, Shashir Zameda, Paul F. Tompkins, Lauren Lapkus, just like a bunch of fucking really dope ass people who are going to be playing Family Feud live and in color. It's a real game, real podium, all the shit. It's not fake. It's the real deal. So it's going to be a good ass time. And if you watch Dropout TV, if you like comedy, you like some Dropout TV, check me out on there. And hopefully I'll be on another television show that doesn't get canceled in the near future.
All right. Jody, where can we find you?
People can find my podcasts and my various projects at my website, Jody with a Y, Avergan.com. But I'm also, I will say I'm bringing back this comedy storytelling show, Ask Roulette, that I've done for a long time. And it's at Caveat in New York City. And our next show is December 28th. Yeah. So people should join us there. That week right after Christmas. I think it's going to be it's a Thursday night. Hopefully it'll be like a start to the long New Year's weekend. But December 28th at Caveat. That's a very fun show.
So those are the best shows, man. That those week are the between best Christmas shows. And New Year's.
Yeah, that holiday vibe. I know. Yeah,
so those are the best shows. Hopefully people will be
there. Everyone's just in a good mood. They feel, you know, goodwill towards all humanity. It's a great time. It's a great time. People can find me on the socials at Ben Ari Lee, Instagram, the other place. I'm on the Blue Sky now, I think, and whatever. I mean, it's all, we're all doing great. So look it up. Definitely want to thank HeadGum, our producer, Andrew McGuire, Gobby Alter, who did our theme music. As always, you can rate and review Fake the Nation on Apple Podcasts. Join our Patreon for bonus content and so much more at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. Nagin will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.